Kieran. I'm joined by Nick.
Hey.
And we are joined today by writer, independent journalist, Hanno Hauenstein. Lovely to meet you. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for the invite.
No problem. It's thank you for coming on. It's like, I love when like people who are very respectable and write really impressive things that like guide my politics and understanding of the world come on. It's like, thank you for coming, let me on your really stupid podcast. I'm like, yeah.
No, I'm a huge fan of the work you guys are doing. It's super crucial.
Oh, all right. I'm going to clip that and send it to my mom. All right. So we asked Hanno on because of a particular article that was written to The Intercept, which we will link in the description. I recommend before this conversation, if you have the time, read the article. It's a good read. But other than that, we can get into this discussion of predominantly Axel Springer and one of Axel Springer's child companies. I can't remember the proper
investments. I think it just is. I think they just are an investor in this company. No,
well, it's like a subsidiary company, officially speaking. Like, right? I mean, it like that. That said, it means that they do take profit from whatever the company earns. So yeah, you could call that an investment, but.
Yeah, well, I guess just simply getting like right into it, your article in The Intercept was primarily talking about Axel Springer. For the listeners of this show, it is, yes, Axel Springer, the major European media conglomerate based out of Germany, led by currently now Matthias Döpfner, so should be familiar to the Cornerspäti listener. But what is not familiar, I think, is you released a piece, I believe a bit over a month ago now, talking about this very bizarre investment of an Israeli, kind of like a similar to like eBay Kleinanzeige, I think would be in Germany, or like Craigslist in the US, but listings right. Primarily for real estate in the settlements. Mm-hmm. And, my major, like, you know, I think it's kind of obvious in all this to, for those who know the background of Axel Springer, that, Matthias Döpfner himself has proudly called himself a non-Jewish Zionist, and that's all fine and dandy for how we look at their reporting, but how does Axel Springer actually end up coming into, ownership, partnership, investment in an Israeli settlement listings website, classifieds site?
Right. Yeah, well, like you said, like it is an interesting combination of facts right there. Like Springer is like it's notoriously known since its inception to be very sort of like pro-Israel, and in recent years increasingly so, also like pretty much like anti-Palestinian. Like they've been pretty much leading the charge of running campaigns against journalists or artists or cultural figures that have quote unquote proximity to BDS or you know, notions on Israel Palestine that are deemed somewhat like inappropriate in the German media context. So they have really established quite like a standing in that regard. And, you know, given that context, it was really remarkable to see this ad that they put out like last year in the Marker. Like I had known that Yad Shtayim is Hebrew for Yad Two, which is like the subsidiary we're speaking about, the Springer subsidiary. That's like the classified ads website. So they had put out this ad in the Marker that said like from the river to the sea, and you could see sort of like which was kind of like a almost a joke, like a pun on, you know, the pro-Palestinian chant, and you could see like this like, you know, a map of small drop pins like all over which would be Israel Palestine, like the whole area of the whole land, not only Israel as in 48 borders, but also along the armistice line, the whole Palestinian, the West Bank, Gaza, everything. So it was, I was just kind of getting curious what's going on there, and looked over the site and realized that they're actually marketing like housing in the occupied West Bank, which I did find quite remarkable. And yeah, this is basically just to give a little bit of background over what's at the heart of the piece. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we should be a bit clear here as well, because like Yad too, also just has ads for things that are being sold in Tel Aviv, like in places that are like the UN recognizes is Israel.
Sure, that's a legitimate business, right? I mean, again, people, you know, everyone I speak to in Israel, like I have reported from Israel, from Tel Aviv as a journalist in the past, and like I have a lot of connections there, and people I speak to is like, yeah, sure, this is like Immobilien Scout for people to find a flat. This is like pretty much like the place to go. It's like Craigslist, you know, if you want to find a place in the city. So it's a very established site, but it also has this other side of the business where like kind of living or buying land in Palestine is pretty much normalized. But back to your question over like how did Springer even come to acquire this company? It's actually quite an interesting story. So you remember the Netanyahu corruption trial, which is actually ongoing in theory, and many people are saying that, you know, the intensity of the war in Gaza for all its, you know, human tragedy and abyss, there are a lot of like theories over why it's going on the way it is, and many people actually on the left are both in Palestine and Israel and other places are saying that I think the established notion is that like, yes, Netanyahu is like a very corrupt and very far-right politician, but it's actually not so clear if any of those other politicians in the cabinet right now, if like Benny Gantz or people like Yair Lapid, if they would run this war, if the war would run significantly different. But Netanyahu is also running the war, many people assume, in order to evade those like corruption trial charges. And what was at stake there in the trial was different cases of like, there was a case of bribery, a case of fraud and embezzlement. And one of the more central parts of this whole affair was the so-called Elovich affair. So there's this guy called, a businessman called Shaul Elovich, who owned the telecommunications company called Bezeq. And so Netanyahu and Elovich had this kind of give and take sort of relationship. At some point, Elovich was supposed to have ensured that Walla, which is like an Israeli news website, would report positively on Netanyahu. And in return, like Netanyahu favored Elovich and his like media projects in the Israeli media market. And now Axel Springer comes into the play. Because Elovich used to own the now Springer subsidiary Yad Shtayim, and actually wanted to sell the ads business, but he needed approval by Netanyahu in order to do so. And according to, if you look actually into the indictment of the Netanyahu trial from a few years ago, like you can see that like Elovich very much put pressure on Netanyahu in order to get those signatures. And that happened remarkably quickly. So like Yad Shtayim was sold to Springer in May 2014. So like roughly 10 years ago for over 160 million euros, for like a remarkable sum. It was like really an overestimation for many people. And like the approval came like... I mean, the approval for the sales came like 9 days after the initial offer. So it's like everything went very quick, like, and it was a very big deal. So essentially, Daphne was also listed in the corruption trial for Netanyahu as a witness in the end of the day. So that's a little bit of the background of like how Yad Shtayim actually moved over to Springer.
Yeah, I do. Speaking of just pure coincidence, the article that I sent you in the just kind of back to the question of the like where there was an op-ed that I added to our notes from Döpfner, where he wrote about that he's a not like why he supports Israel, and that he is, as you know, he mentioned, a non-Jewish Zionist. That article came out like 3 weeks after they bought Yad 2. Yeah. I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it was just like when you mentioned 2014, I was like, wait, where did I see that as well in the notes here? Aside from that, I mentioned it, but I also saw it in the date. Of it was the June 12th, 2014 is when the article came out, and May 8th of the same month. So I think there's a connection here. But anyway, the extra level of just seedy corruption of the Netanyahu government, adding to how a German right-wing media conglomerate comes, you know, into possession of a real estate listings company, somehow makes sense in this world today. But also just kind of, you know, furthering into then like Axel Springer's participation in this is how you mentioned that then that you saw the ad that shows, you know, the settlements being listed as well as other real estate properties within Israel, Palestine. But how has Axel Springer, if they have kind of jumped in on this opportunity to then maybe underwrite or support some of this politic of like the settlers movement, because we've seen that there have been some cases of organizations hosting events to kind of like, peace out the West Bank and Gaza after you know the genocide is over. Has Axel Springer you know, kind of become more open about that, or is it simply just something that then is continuously kept in the background with their, you know, support and their investment?
You mean if they have been like openly speaking about like wanting to
or if they've like had like involvement with people like that, like, you know, Axel Springer hosting members from the settlement movement to come and speak at events and stuff like that. You know, there has been kind of this I don't want to say that it's been like, you know, like secret or anything like that, but the presence of these people have been quite normalized, I feel, within Western politics. And it wouldn't surprise me if Axel Springer also has like aligned themselves with members or has invited members quite vocal of the settler movement through this.
Well, look, there was only like a few weeks ago, actually after my article came out, there was a conference held at the offices of Axel Springer, the offices of Die Welt, which was like a collaborative conference together with the Jerusalem Post. And this conference invited Marco Buschmann, who's like the, you know, the German
Justice Minister, yeah.
As you know, exactly. And also initially invited Amichai Shikli, who's basically the organizer, like one of the front faces of another conference that was held only, don't quote me, I think about a week or 1.5, 2 weeks prior to that conference, that was like pretty infamously like reported on also here as like a kind of like major transgression. It was this kind of like pro resettlement of Gaza sort of conference. So it was basically the settlers movement. People like Itamar Ben-Gvir, Bezalel Smotrich, you know, these like hard right settler figures that are part of this current right-wing Israeli government. So they had organized this conference, and Amichai Shikli, who's like, as far as I remember correctly, the head of the diaspora affairs for Israel, but like he had been an integral part of that conference. So this, some people posted about this on Twitter. I did, Thilo Jung did, some other people noted to the fact that there's a little bit of a discrepancy here if you invite, you know, someone like Amichai Shikli and Marco Buschmann. And what happened was that like Dusan Tekal and Ahmed Mansour and some speakers actually turned down their speaking commissions for the conference, and essentially Amichai Shikli just disappeared from the program. But I mean, it does tell you that, like, apparently Axel Springer didn't necessarily have a problem in the first place with inviting a figure like that, that has been pretty vocal in terms of, like, racist comments, and also, I mean, not that it maybe matters in this context so much, but he's also made some horrible homophobic comments in the past as well. So I don't know. It's just like Axel Springer. I don't know if they, you know, are actively engaging with the settler community. I actually do not think that that is their ideological, you know, veneer. I think what they align with most like they want good PR, right? I mean, they would align with, like, liberal Zionism or with, like, people like I don't think that Springer takes a lot of issue with someone like Benjamin Netanyahu, even though he's got some bad rap recently.
Feels that then that Springer's, like, Zionism is just like a kind of general acceptance of being pro-Israel. There's not like a specific political direction to it half the time, as long as the Israeli state's preserved. And I mean, yeah, I intentional or not, they end up providing a platform for this. This is what it ends up kind of looking like, you know, is that, like, anything pro-Israel, the good, the bad, or the ugly, will take it. And if that means that then, a few bad apples are amongst the mix, they're fine with that, you know. To mention that these bad apples hold quite a lot of influence and sway within, you know, greater politics within the Zionist and particularly settler movement. So
I think that's a good move. Sorry, Kieran. Sorry.
Just saying that I think there's kind of like one aspect of it is very kind of German aspect, which is this kind of very like hair trigger a response to any criticism of Israel, because you mentioned they're quite close to Netanyahu, but like Welt in particular and a handful of other Axel Springer publications have been very critical of people like Orban, who is not a one-for-one comparison with the things that Netanyahu's done, but like you can throw a lot of the criticisms that Welt has had at Orban in the past to Netanyahu, but it just feels like Axel Springer would never do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that essentially, the commitment to Israel, the commitment to Zionism in that respect is written into Axel Springer's work contracts. It's like there is no sort of secret made out of the fact that, like, they align strongly with Israel. But, like, when you look at the ideological foundations of that, I don't think this is an engagement in the specificities of Israeli politics, but much rather, as most often in Germany, actually an engagement with projecting something on Israel that kind of absolves your own German sentiment of shame, of guilt, of kind of like a sense of like the shadow of historical responsibility that somehow seems alleviated in the public eye if you're just like coming to the front with like very pro Israeli sort of like sentiments. So I think that's essentially where this is coming from. But I, regardless, you know, if like if they do or not, you know, agree with, you know, even if Springer were to, you know, now come out with a statement and say like we actually denounce people like Itamar Ben-Gvir, we don't align with the settler movement. What Yadstein, their subsidiary, is doing is like a very real, you know, like kind of contributing to and benefiting from like a very, very serious abuse of human rights. Like the idea that like, you know, you publish ads and sell houses on land that has been expropriated from Palestinians or is in the process of being expropriated from Palestinians is like, that is very much, you know, like it's not only kind of contributing to this project, it's also like really keeping it economically valid and economically running. So I think maybe it's like more sort of intellectually kind of feasible to look at like what are the real material engagements here instead of like asking for Springer's ideological commitments, because I guess those differ also. Definitely yeah. himself, Springer is very like is very pro Israel, but I mean this might differ from case to case.
Mm. Yeah,
there is also just to talk on that point though as well, because like one publication that is Springer owned that we love on this podcast because we regularly read it is politico.eu,
right,
which is in English. So it does often feel like with this topic, while still being somewhat pro-Israel and very neoconservative, because Politico has always been very neoconservative, doesn't go to the same extent of kind of like pro-Israeliness that right. like Welt or Do Build do this? I don't pay attention enough to Build.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Build, okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Build is very much. Build is bid. Yeah, bid. Bid. Serves a different purpose though than Welt. Like Welt, you can have then like the more like intellectual argument about why Germany's support for Israel is so vital for, you know, preserve. The thing I find that's also very interesting too is how Axel Springer very much believes in like they ideologically. Like bound to some sect of Zionism or not doesn't really matter, but they do take it into the sense that Zionism is based regardless of who is leading it. The Israeli state is like a pillar in the clash of cultures, so they're very like adamant about like, because in Dubfna's like reasoning for his support of Israel, it always comes back into this like very very like deep hatred, like just deep Islamophobia, it, you know, clearly is, you know, it's always like the sense of the fear of jihad, this and that and that. And one of the weirdest things, especially I feel that then around October 7th or post October 7th, is that then it's been kind of hard, it looks like, even for like right wing media in Europe to then provide that argument with, you know, the genocide that's going on, you know, like, I mean, they try, but there's not this like preeminent fear continuously that like Hamas is going to like export terrorism internationally. You know, that's not like their MO, you know, it's not like, you know, like,
yeah, we talked,
we've like talked about this before, but you know, it really, like, whether that be true or not, it's like, there's just kind of like, it hits all the main points of like what you would imagine of, you know, just generic European right-wing support for the Israeli state. Like, it's very, like, actually not unique. It's kind of right. just odd, you know?
It's, I agree. But it is interesting that, like, you know, when you listen to, like, Netanyahu's speeches ever since October, or when you listen to, like, Israel's President Herzog, you know, what they will continuously reinvoke is this image of, like, Gaza as a kind of, you know, as an almost like an issue of the West as such. Like, it's no longer just about Palestine or Israel. It's like, it's about like the West, you know, it's about like the heart of darkness, right? It's about the lightness and darkness and the West against the jungle.
Yeah.
That's the rhetoric that is being employed. And Gaza is sort of like portrayed as a kind of a test case for, like, waning sort of power and like the kind of like invasion of, I mean, it's a very sort of like 9/11-ish.
Yeah, yeah, it very much is. Yeah, a very 9/11 ideology towards Christendom again, or, you know, I guess Judeo-Christendom, as now neoconservatives just, you know, have just used a made up term. Against the, you know, barbarian, you know, Islamic world. Like, it can just be put in anywhere. Yeah.
I feel like this really, like, the kind of like eerie sort of like doppelganger, you know, mirror image of that rhetoric is also what from the German end of the equation, Springer is continuously invoking this idea of like kind of like liberal freedom being threatened by like crazy Islamist forces sort of like coming here or. Quote-unquote post-colonial leftists that dare to make historical connections between the era of colonialism and the Holocaust and the Nakba. You know, this is like, this seems to be like the ultimately the at the heart of like the Die Welt ideology.
Yeah. Well, we can we could surely swing back to the you know, the ideological pinnings of, you know, German right wing media. That is a topic that is definitely a centerpiece of Corner Späti. But a question that then that I had kind of focusing back onto Axel Springer's involvement with Yad 2 is then Germany condemns the settlements,
right,
as well as most other countries in the world. So how, what is then kind of the legality of then their participation with a company that then does this? Like, this kind of seems like a big, massive gray area. Like, yes, Israel does this with, you know, massive disapproval from the international community, but they still do it. And it feels like that then that Germany or whatever legal measures that then could or possibly be there, either Axel Springer is too powerful and it doesn't matter to begin with, or the German state doesn't actually care about its own like legal pinnings on this issue, or maybe there aren't any and I'm just too optimistic.
These are all really great questions. I mean, first of all, I think, you know, like, yes, Germany does condemn the settlement project, and kind of the international community does condemn the settlement project every once in a while. But like, let's also kind of remember that like there has been kind of de facto impunity on the ongoing occupation, slow annexation for close to 6 years now. So that's like, that's also a reality. And I think it's a reality that's only very recently disrupted by the fact that like, you know, by October 7th and by something that like, by the way in which like the massive destruction of human life and infrastructure that Israel is inflicting in the Gaza Strip has really kind of like moved the attention of the world also on what's happening in the West Bank much more clearly. And it seems like now that they're beginning sanctions, not only by the States but also by the EU, it seems like there is a little bit of more kind of concrete steps to maybe end this. But I do still think, when I follow these discussions, that there is like, I mean, when you I just read the articles on the sanctions that were passed by the EU, and I think there is still a lot of like confusion about what is what. Like, first of all, like the settlement project is not like a project that emanates by a bunch of crazy people that just go to Palestine, to the West Bank, you know, and build houses. It is a Israeli state run.
Yeah, it's incredibly formalized. It is not like
it's like the building material comes from Israel. The kind of infrastructure is provided by the state. If you look at a case like, you know, we had, I'm sure you guys heard of and followed the Berlinale debacle. You know, this the film No Other Land that got a lot of good reviews here, but also sparked like a major kind of discussion. Like it plays in Masafayata in the South Hebron Hills. So this is like a cluster of Palestinian villages that have been declared a quote-unquote firing zone, like a military training ground, so to speak, by the Israeli Supreme Court in May 2022. So the Supreme Court said this is a military zone. The very same Supreme Court, you know, that the Israeli public has been trying to save by its imminent destruction in 2022, before the whole kind of drama of the war started. So like we're kind of like, it's like, I think a lot of people don't know that or aren't aware of the degree to which the settlement project is very much like a kind of entrenched state project. And like it's been sometimes the Supreme Court decides that like something that is happening in the West Bank is illegal, and that's great. You know, sometimes it meets its function, but more often than not, it actually contributes to like entrenching what is going on there. And right now, Bezalel Smotrich, who's himself a settler living in an outpost, is the head of the civil administration that regulates what's going on in the West Bank. So it's like, I think there's still a lot of confusion over what is what. And like you have, you know, quote unquote legal settlements according to Israeli law. You have illegal settlements according to Israeli law. These are called outposts. The sanctions that have been passed by the EU now, they refer to, I think, three individuals and two outposts. So this is like, in comparison to the 700,000 Israeli settlers residing in the West Bank, this feels kind of like a joke. I mean, like it's of course, yeah. It's a good start and it's wonderful and it's important that this is happening. But like, especially in the case of Germany, you know, when you have a German publisher / company that is, you know, again, like very much engaging in like these really grave human rights abuses. And on Yatstein, on the website, you can buy houses on outposts that are even those like outposts that are illegal according to Israeli law. All of it is illegal according to international law. But like even the ones that are illegal according to Israeli law, you can look it up. You can find houses there, and this land is partly not even, you know, it's not even formalized according to any sort of legal superstructure. So it's like the whole thing is kind of wild, honestly. It's kind of crazy that one would assume that a country like Germany now engages within the EU context in passing a sanction against this structure, but at the same time allows a German company to actively engage in profiting from it. I think that's where the key of the division lies. I hope I caught your question.
Oh no, of course, absolutely. It really, I mean, because I was curious of that for myself, because the settlements question in Germany is always a very odd one as well, because it seems like it's just the formalized, you know, the formalized general opinion that they're bad, but you know, there are of course no actions to be taken. If say a German were to probably, at least I don't think there would be, if a German, you know, a German Israeli were to participate in the settler, you know, or to like, you know, live in an outpost or whatever, I feel that up until maybe now, there wouldn't have been any repercussions for them. It simply would have just been like, oh, well, you know, that's not like, we don't like that, but they're not going to do anything. And that is the general vibe, I feel, of the how most Western countries have always kind of reacted to them, is that they happen. We don't like it, but we're not going to do anything about it. And it's kind of crazy too. I mean, just in the sense of for, you know, the listener at home, if you can have the opportunity to look up what a map of the West Bank looks like, the borders are not some like defined, you know, perfectly, you know, here is one, you know, state and here's another, that the settlers are all throughout scattered in the West Bank, to where then it also like the borders of what this used to look like a few, you know, decades ago and to now is becoming like unrecognizable because of how many of, you said 700,000 settlers live there, you know, it's not right. Like it's not, yeah, it's been an ongoing issue and problem for quite some time. So
yeah, usually get it referred to as a Swiss cheese, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The actual map of what is West Bank and what is effectively Israeli settlements is starting to look like Swiss cheese. Yeah. I related to this, the broader topic is, how was this ad kind of like reacted to within Israel? Like, just to give a little bit of cultural context, is this ad viewed as kind of like a dog whistle, or is it normal, like the way it portrays the map, the way it says like, oh yeah, you can just put like pointing to an illegal settlement and saying like, yes, we Yad 2 also covers this area. Would that genuinely surprise some people? Like the same way that like you can technically put sword into Amazon and get results. But like, yeah, I'm just kind of curious the cultural context within Israel itself.
I mean, like I remember, you know, I was visiting Israel-Palestine at the time that the map was published in the Marker. That's also how I saw it. And it most people I showed this to basically thought it was a joke. You know, it's like it looks like a joke. It's like from the river to the sea. You know, it's like it's kind of like. I honestly didn't think that Jatzstein was doing this. I just like just by going on the website and you see the website and it's like kind of divided into different sections. It's divided into 48 Israel and like the north and south, and then it's divided into the West Bank. And the people I showed this to also kind of were surprised, like especially someone like Dror Etkes that I'm quoting in the piece, who's like a pretty known in the Israeli context, a pretty known like settlements experts that can just explain to you all the it's a complex, you know, the land grabbing situation is not complex at all. It's like what happens in the West Bank is one-on-one colonialism, but like the sub kind of like there are a lot of sub complexities to it that I think important to understand in order to grasp what is actually happening. And he can really explain to you the intricacies of what is going on. And Dror was really surprised by the fact that like a website like Jatzstein offers you to live in illegal outposts that hasn't even been legalized by the Israeli government. I mean, that's also quite insane. Like it's at the same time he was saying to me, well, you know, like the law in this context is somewhat of a recommendation, right? Because many of the people, again, like Simcha Rotman and Bezalel Smotrich, some of the people who are part of this very government do themselves live in outposts. So it's like there is a bit of like there's a lot of wiggle room and a lot of discrepancy between the legal requirements and the factual reality. But nevertheless, like to your point, like some of the people I spoke about this with, like in the Israeli context, were still quite surprised. However, at the same time, you know, it is like I was there 2 months after October 7th, which, you know, shook everyone up, and like and the Gaza, you know, operation war, mass killing of civilians in Gaza was happening parallel. So I think the issue is not one that like really survives the news cycle, at least not in the Israeli context. But I'm very curious where this is going, because all these posts are still up, and I do believe, you know, a company like Airbnb, for example, that had listings on all over the West Bank, they had Human Rights Watch write a report about that. That temporarily took it all down and eventually put it back up. But like, there are similar companies that are like international companies that are engaging with the West Bank in one way or the other, and that like eventually landed on like a UN list. And hopefully we'll face repercussions for that. But like
it's also a bit of an damning indictment that like the thing that makes you stop doing something heinous and illegal is that you end up on a list organized by the UN. I feel like there should hopefully be a couple of steps before that.
100%. Yes. I mean, it's interesting that like in recent years, you know, Ben and Jerry's announced that they are no longer selling their products in the West Bank, and they were actually, you know, portrayed as these evil BDS supporters, these like two Jewish owners that are actually, you know, very subtle, and they still market their products within Israel proper. But like the fact that they pulled out of the West Bank was comparatively much more of a scandal than so many other companies that are very much active in the West Bank, like Axel Springer, essentially.
Right. Fair enough. Cool. I love this.
Yeah. No. I remember the Ben and Jerry's one was kind of it even like tricked, I think, a lot of people on the left, being like, oh wow, you know, Ben and Jerry supports BDS, but it was like, no, that is absolutely not what it is. They just don't support this one insanely heinous thing that that the Israeli state does and just supports.
they were originally on the BDS list, weren't they? Like way years and years ago before they pulled out of the West Bank, I believe they were one of the things that were targeted like by the campaign. It's like, do not buy Ben and Jerry's.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're kind of considered like a BDS success story, basically. That,
I didn't know this. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any press releases that say, oh, we're pulling out of the West Bank ever attribute it to because BDS. But I believe they're considered one of them because you still get like a couple of left-wing like posters who remember that from years ago and are still angry at who don't know they've pulled out of the West Bank and are still angry at Ben Jerry's, basically.
So the last question that I had actually more or less got completely broken apart in our earlier discussion because there really isn't, there doesn't seem to then, I guess, be in all, regardless of how horrible all this is that Axel Springer invests and directly or indirectly supports the settler movement, but at least invests in a platform that then allows it to continuously exist. It is very unclear then, like Axel Springer's, going back into the kind of talking about the general support of Zionism, kind of doesn't then allow this, like there seems to then be not like just by accident, all this is then kind of, come into be that then Axel Springer is, a part of this somehow. I don't know. Because my initial then original question was along the lines of that, then if Axel Springer kind of uses their attitude towards the German like Staatsräson or like the reason of state that Germany has had since Merkel in 2008 of mm-hmm. that, Germany's reason of existence is to support the existence of the state of Israel. Or Israel's right to exist, sorry. But they don't seem to have really taken any backlash for this. So, I mean, aside from your article, but Axel Springer hasn't really responded to you in any regard. They haven't then had a thing of, well, the settlement's illegal or not, we still support Israel because of this and that and that. There hasn't been the opportunity for, I guess, something of the sort to happen, I guess, of Axel Springer to be caught with egg on their face of a direct support to the settlers movement, if I understand that correctly, then
you'll basically never get a notes app apology from.
Oh no. of course not. But just simply in the sense of that, then Axel Springer manages, I guess, in a very odd way to like be able to rub up as close as they can with like the furthest right of like Israeli society, but then never mm-hmm. have it be a direct thing that they're like actively supporting it because there is like a vagueness. It feels like. In their support of the state, so they may, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, you may never get a notes apology for them, but it's like, it feels like that, like the scenario for it to ever to exist, Axel Springer kind of always will be like free from guilt because it's like, oh, well, oopsie on us. We just love Israel so much, like,
I mean, to
my crime was loving Israel too much. Like,
I mean, yes, that will be their response. But like, I always think about like Julian Reichelt, right? Because that was the last kind of like Axel Springer scandal. And they were just like, well, he's fired. We didn't do anything wrong, even though like every journalist in Berlin kind of like knew about this before it became public knowledge, thanks to the New York Times. But like, they just can't. They're a shark. They move forward. So they never look back, never acknowledge a mistake or whatever. So. Yeah. Sorry, Hanno, go on.
No. I think these are interesting questions. I mean, there is no, I think much of like the kind of confusion is about the principal vagueness of what Staatsräson really means.
It starts already from a vague point.
Right.
It can be like, whatever you want it to be, really.
Yeah, I mean, like one could reasonably say, like if you have an interest in Israel's present and future, this is not necessarily my personal position, but like one could reasonably say, okay, if you care about Israel from a historical perspective as a German, and that's actually something I do empathize with, especially as a non-Jewish German, I do very much agree that Germans should care about Jews at least. given the brutal anti-Semitic history, but like, what does Shlat Chazon mean? If that is transferred to the Israeli context, one could also say like, well, you know, Germany would have to strengthen Israel's civil society. Would, after October 7th, why doesn't Germany strengthen, you know, the positions or the livelihood and like strong voices of the people who have lost people on October 7th? That would be like, in a way, the most intuitive thing. Like, people who have lost family on October 7th are some of the people that are the most kind of vocal against this government's operation in Gaza and against the kind of revenge and retribution policies. And in some ways, like, Staatsräson is such a vague concept, and it's often like interpreted in kind of selfish, self-serving ways, that it's essentially just like a huge PR gig. In the way that I look at it, like, Matthias Döpfner is just a bit of like an extreme and somewhat almost like, you know, ironic sort of example of this. Like when you mentioned the Julian Reichelt case that was infamously fired from Springer for sexual abuse allegations in the workplace, and you know, there was the New York Times report, yes, but there was also like the Zeit report, Die Zeit, that published like text change between Döpfner and others and Reichelt. And Döpfner famously said things like, you know, I'm wary of like of foreigners and whatnot. But he also famously said like Zionismus über alles, like Zionism über alles, kind of like, which is almost like, you know, it kind of encapsulates like the absurdity of this whole thing, like using this kind of like, you know, Nazi codified language on this like projection of Israel as a kind of a happy ending to your own like historical predicament. Anyway, it's like, but I don't think that, you know, your question was also like, how much do they use like Staatsräson, right? I mean, like, in order to like to,
yeah, well, I feel that then. They don't, I mean, any Axel Springer publication is never going to be like explicitly, you know, calling it by its name, but they do. I mean, the paper, I mean, the entire company then being owned by a character like Döpfner, allows it to kind of have this like ideological cushioning that then also, because it's a German company, you know, like they don't need to explicitly say it, but the fact of it being a conservative German company that then pretty much controls like most private media in this country, as well as growing internationally. It is kind of just, it can get away with so much because it cares so much, you know, regardless of if that care is legitimate or not, or if it is, I think you can rightfully look at it in the sense of just how the global right looks at Israel, of, you know, how Orban or someone like even, you know, insanely far right wing figures like Richard Spencer, for example, in the United States, see it as a bastion for, you know, whatever you interpret Western ideals as. But yeah, like I feel that then, like, no matter how radical it gets with those ideas, it being German is going to always be its like kind of like protective shield to most people. You know, the incredibly critical voices will be drowned out, but nonetheless, it feels to me that like that's always the attitude towards Axel Springer, whether it be Oz Poshot writing an op-ed about his support of Israel, you know, however lazily and poorly argued it may be, it will always be from a ideologically similar generic point of this, that it doesn't really matter who's doing what, as we can see that then Axel Springer is very much wholeheartedly behind what the Netanyahu government is doing. I've not really, I mean, Spiegel recently published an article somewhat questioning the German position to things, but we're not going to be getting anything similar, it feels like, from any, whether it be Focus or Welt or whatever German publication that then is owned by this company, because it doesn't need to do it, you know, like,
right.
Yeah. I to add to this, because as someone who Look, I'm just going to say, ever since October has been a great time for people who can't speak and understand German. I'm having a great time in this country. Just being completely ignorant to it all. But the thing about Staatsraison, like this kind of like, I feel at a certain point, I feel like the vagueness has been weaponized. And like also the German attitude has been weaponized, because I would describe the majority of like German citizens, German Gentile, you know, citizens as being like, just kind of like, maybe rightfully, whatever your position on it, is afraid to do any kind of criticism of Israel or the Jewish state. But like most of this country, or a lot of this country, is just like, you know, old women who live in Baden-Württemberg and are good Catholics and just like hate the idea of people dying. Like, and like, it's why like ceasefire is always like such a popular position in every country when you poll about it, is like, how can you oppose the idea of ceasefire? Like, right. You don't have to be a super political person, but like, Germany has this extra bonus, which I feel like Axel Springer and other publications take advantage of like, who dare speak against us as like a German who rightfully has concerns about like saying anything untoward towards Jewish people or Israel because of the history of this country. The other thing about Staatsraison of just like the protection of Israel is like, it's not explicit, but there is kind of like, there is versions of protecting Israel that are allowed and not allowed. Like, you can make an argument that someone who is for like a one state solution, for like the pluralistic democratic future in which Israeli Jews and Palestinian can share a society together and build like their own country, is a form of protecting the idea of Israel. But like, they don't want to hear that. And they also seem to be very on board the idea of like things similar to Elon Musk can say the most heinously anti-Semitic thing on Twitter, and then he just has to do a photo op at Auschwitz, and they're all like, okay, good job, you did it. You've solved all the problems, and he'll still go back to Twitter and talk about the great replacement.
Oh, yeah. But that's a whole other, like, the participation factor of, like, Germany's, like, remembrance culture is, like, all you need for most people, you know? I mean, that's a whole other discussion to be had.
Like, I guess what I'm saying is, like,
I did like your example right there, because I do think that like Axel Springer has, you know, you're just on the Berlinale case, someone like, you know, like Bassel Adra and Yuval Abraham, the makers and protagonists of like this film No Other Land, they stood on the stage and Yuval Abraham basically described, you know, his lived reality in engaging in the West Bank as like an Israeli citizen, someone has citizenship, and as opposed to someone like Bassel Adra, who doesn't have citizenship, as the one of apartheid. And as soon as you use such terms, which are pretty much like, you know, accepted among the human rights community in that context, and add up with the legal reality, the racial reality, and the lived reality of the people on the ground, you know, there's no real question, if you research this, that this is like an accurate description of reality. But as soon as you bring something like this quote unquote forbidden into the context of the German discussion, Springer are the first one. I mean, journalists working for Springer were the first ones also factually that like scandalized this on Twitter, wrote the first articles, made the wave and kind of like create this sort of buzz that essentially leads to like these bizarre situations, like Claudia Roth kind of declaring that she clapped only with one, you know, for one of the participants, you know, bizarrely repeating the exactly same logic that she was supposedly clapping for to be criticized. I mean, I worry personally that like this sort of like model of like scandalizing journalism and policing voices on Israel Palestine, even if they're Israeli and Jewish, you know, I mean, regardless of whom it hits on, it hits hard with Palestinians the most because they're the most vulnerable in these discussions. But like the absurdity that even policing, you know, Jewish Israelis in these discussions and not seeing the kind of like absurdity of that, like I'm worried that this is like a trend setting kind of model that is taking place in other outlets outside of Springer that are not necessarily right wing. You know, so an outlet like Tagesspiegel.
I was just about to say Tagesspiegel, who had targeted.
As Seth wrote like a horrible article on the whole affair. I mean, again, like people can have different positions on these things, and I'm not like, you know, I would be the last to sort of suggest that like my personal position is the only one that's accurate and correct. But like I do feel
that's why we
like,
have you here, though. That's exactly the point.
Not the case. Why are you even here? Yeah. Wow, what are we doing, Nick?
No, but like I do feel like it's a pretty worrying trend, and like I've some of these things have been happening in Germany for quite some time. The kind of canceling of artists, the kind of like, you know, public shaming of journalists and intellectuals. Like we had Achille Mbembe, we had Michael Rothberg and Nemil Hassan and all these people in the public sphere kind of, you know, like shamed and defamed. But like recently in the last 6 months, I do feel like the kind of international attention and the kind of like sense of disbelief of people looking at Germany and like asking themselves like, what the fuck is going on with you guys? Something is wrong there. You know, it's like, this is something I've been seeing more and more of. And I do feel like it's kind of at a point where either they kind of, you know, in Germany you would say, die würden jetzt mal die Kurve kriegen. So they need to kind of like, they need to get it right at some point. They need to understand that there's something flawed, something really self-serving here, that it doesn't really have to do a lot with kind of protecting Jews in Germany. And it's, you know, in the Springer case, I think very much egotistic and driven by other motives.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that that's actually like a good place to kind of leave off, because I don't want to tail off too much into the sense of the cancellation of activists and how policing of speech has been done. We've already done an episode on that on multiple occasions. Yeah. I feel.
Yeah. No, I feel like we should do another one later.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like it's slowing down.
The most important takeaway from the article, essentially, you know, regardless of what you think of freedom of speech, like as you said, these are kind of different discussions that I was mixing up a little bit, but like regardless of what you think of that, regardless how you interpret Staatsraison as a German or non-German, I think an international company of that format, on like of that magnitude, like such as Axel Springer, has a very, very clear ethical responsibility to not engage in like in such, you know, real deeply entrenched abuses of human rights. And like that's something, you know, that should be the key message here, and that should be something everyone should ask for, not even like just people on the left or people that are somehow engaged in that region or feel deeply for the plight of Palestinians. I think it's something very simple and very basic. Like Axel Springer should not you know, abuse human rights of people.
Of course.
I feel like we are witnessing the kind of like what will be a meme in like 20 years time, of like the kind of like, did you know Axel Springer did this in the 2020s?
I was thinking exactly in the sense of it, like Axel Springer as a company is just the extent of like, if Israel has a, like 100,000 fans, I'm one of them. If Israel has like 10 fans, I'm one of them. If Israel has no more fans in the world, then I have died or whatever, you know, like that like horrible meme format that's way too long. But like they are so ride or die that you're absolutely right. In 20 years, it's going to be looked at like, did you know that, you know, like, you know, when we did the episode about, you know, reviewing Germany's like recognition of genocides, about how bad they are about that when they like have somewhat of their foot, like, you know, their like toes in the water. So yeah, like you nailed it on the head, Kieran. Like, we're going to be doing an episode, of course, 20 years from now, because the show will still exist, talking about this exact moment.
I'm going to be 50 podcasting. I'm going to be the last person on Twitter. I'll still be calling it Twitter.
Anyway, Hanno, thank you so much for coming on. Where can our listeners find you? We will link them as well in the description.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a freelance journalist. I'm an independent journalist. I write for different outlets, for The Guardian, The Nation. I'm starting actually with a bunch of very intelligent people. We're starting our own media platform in German. It's called The Diasporist. It's about to launch in like 1 to 2 months. And I'm very much looking forward, and you can all find it online.
Oh, that's very cool. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, we can have yourself or one of the other smart people on to promote that and talk about it, because that 100%.
Yeah, that would be lovely. Yeah.
Speaking of promotion, just over half the tickets to our Eurovision fundraising show for Medical Aid Palestine, about half the tickets are sold, still some of them left. Come on down. It'll be great fun. I got confirmation today that the bar, the money made at the bar at the venue, will be going also towards Medical Aid Palestine. So that's pretty great. And people are driving in from Poland and the Netherlands and the UK. So, hey, you listening at home, what's your excuse? Are you in the United States? That's actually a pretty good excuse. But if you're not, you can come down to Berlin 11th of May. Tickets are in description. And with that, we will catch you on the bonus feed. Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.